You're listening to Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. I'm Randy Eccles along with co-host Dee Bonner, and we are at the year-end drive. So these are slightly different Community Voices where we're still getting to know our neighbors, but we're also asking you to support not only Community Voices, but NPR Illinois as a whole. And you can do that by going to nprillinois.org and making a donation, or you can also call 206-9847. And if you do that now, it's really appreciated. If you've already done it, thank you. And one of our strong supporters and friends of the station, and actually a member of our community advisory board, is Adam Porter. And Adam, how we're starting these out most of the time now, so we're asking you to introduce yourself, if you would.
My name is Adam Porter. I'm a professor of religion at Illinois College. I've been in Central Illinois now for about 20 years. I really appreciate all the programming I get to listen to on WUIS. I'm originally from the Washington, D.C. area and have lived in Ohio and Boston. And before coming here, I spent 6 years or 7 years in North Carolina. So I've kind of bounced around all over the country. And one of the things that I've actually enjoyed pretty much everywhere I've been is a strong connection to NPR. And so I was really delighted when I moved here to find WUIS, and I've been listening to it and enjoying it for a long time. My work involves teaching religion. I was trained in biblical studies, but I teach a whole lot of courses related to religion in the contemporary world as well, including a course on religion and film. I've taught courses on sort of world religion. I've taught courses on, I actually just finished a course on Satan and popular culture. And one of the things that I miss is, and this has become, I guess, more a problem over the 2 decades I've been in Central Illinois, is the real sort of dearth of international news in newspapers. And newspapers are, you know, there's a big catastrophe, I guess, happening with print media nationwide, and the number of newspapers is dwindling. And so I'm interested in the world. I'm interested in international affairs and national affairs. And so NPR and WUIS really provides me that connection to the larger worldwide community.
You seem very well-versed in a lot of areas. What kind of brought you to Central Illinois? I'm really curious, since you have the background in religion and you kind of moved around a lot.
Well, I moved around in terms of getting educated. So I was in Boston to my first few years of graduate school, and then I was in North Carolina to finish up my PhD program. I had lived in the Midwest for my undergraduate. I'd spent 4 years in Ohio. And when I graduated, I lived for another 2 years in Columbus working for John Deere. I like the Midwest. I was interested in getting a job at a small liberal arts college. And so when I had the job offer from Illinois College, I was delighted to be able to move to Central Illinois.
And, you know, Central Illinois, Jacksonville, Springfield, how do you see that, having the experience of seeing other places around the country? What makes this a unique area?
Well, there's a lot of things that I guess every place is unique. The thing that I like about living here, there's a number of things that I really like. One of the things is, you know, I have friends who are in living in other places. And, you know, the lifestyle here is pretty good. Traffic isn't a problem. You know, I mean, UIS doesn't have traffic reports because generally there's nothing to report on. Traffic flows pretty well most of the time. I don't have to worry about rush hour. I can ride my bicycle to work. I ride my bicycle around town. You know, I have friends who like bicycling, you know, and they have to look for bike paths or look for sort of special locations. And where I live in Jacksonville, I can ride basically, if I go a mile north or west of my house, I'm on country roads and I can ride for 2 hours and see 3 cars. My biggest concern is that I'm going to get run over by somebody who's messing around with their texting while they're on what they think is an empty country road, because most of the time they are empty. So that's still a concern. Getting run over is still a concern, but you know, there's basically no traffic. And so it's a pretty safe place to go bicycling. So I really enjoy that. I liked having a being in a community where my kids could walk to school. They could walk to visit their friends. They could get around on bicycles pretty easily. Small towns have some drawbacks. I wish we had a more vibrant restaurant scene. I really wish we had an Ethiopian restaurant any place closer than Chicago. I love Ethiopian food and it ain't around here. there are things I miss, but there's a lot of things that I really like. And you know, some of the other things that I think would be more challenging, access to more esoteric movies or books or something like that. With the internet, you know, there's a lot of places you can live and have access to the same sorts of resources you would if you were living in Chicago or Washington, D.C.
Excellent. You were mentioning sort of the collapse of the print business model for newspapers. Yeah. And we're starting to see that continue. Your first digital sort of ate up the classifieds. And now we're seeing digital really disrupt other media too, because there can be more direct tracking on the advertising that goes there. So radio, much like newspaper, is seeing advertising declines at times. It's one of the big reasons why we are appreciative that our business model includes listener support. And I greatly encourage anyone out there who listens, who hasn't given, to support the news and other programming on NPR Illinois, to go to nprillinois.org, and it'll take about 2 minutes to make a gift with your credit card online, or you can also call 206-9847. That's 206-9847, and you can speak to somebody about making a gift.
Randy, do you guys still have the calendar club?
We do. Thanks for asking. Yeah, it's an excellent way. A matter of fact, it's the preferred way to give. We started that several years ago, and it actually makes it very manageable. Somebody who is giving for the first time and is not sure they can afford much can start out for as little as $5 a month and be able to, you know, give $60 a year, but they're just seeing $5 each month on their credit card. And some people do much more than that. Some do day sponsorships at $20 a month. And we have some people who do, you know, $100 a month or more and are in the Cornerstone Society. So whatever you can afford makes a big difference, especially as more and more people give. And as I remind folks, listeners are our number one source of our operating expenses. So it's really important that if you listen and can do it, that you give. So thank you. And really thank you if you've given already. We appreciate all the existing Calendar Club members who make a huge difference in us being able to have a sort of defined cash flow that we know will come here and pay the bills.
One interesting thing right now is to see how things are changing, like we said, with newspapers, with radio, with everything going on. And like Randy said, our listeners really do such a great service to us by giving. But Adam, I want to know, you know, in this changing time, how was it like teaching classes, you know, amid COVID? How has that kind of changed the way you would traditionally teach?
It's been a challenge. The college made the decision that we were going to have face-to-face classes, but we had to sort of make sure that we were doing it safely. And so one of the things that we did over the summer was we went and sort of spaced out all of the classrooms so that our desks are now all at least 6 feet apart from each other. And one of the things that meant is that almost all of our classrooms went from being whatever, 30 people classrooms to being 12 people classrooms. You know, our poor registrar had a heck of a time trying to figure out how to get people into rooms where that would be big enough for the classes that they had, given the reduced amount of space that we had in each class. So it was a real challenge. What a lot of us did, what I did myself, was I had a class that meant 4 days a week. And so I just divided it into two groups. And so I had one group that met on Mondays and, well, I guess it'd be Tuesdays and Thursdays, and a second group that met on Wednesdays and Fridays. I had a class that meant 3 days a week. And so we had one face-to-face class. I divided that into two groups and had one face-to-face class on Monday, one face-to-face class on Wednesday. And then a sort of everybody, both of the two groups got together and had a Zoom class on Friday. I think the other challenges were things like everybody had to wear masks all the time. And so that made it very hard to sort of, all the things that people have been talking about the whole year with this is, you know, you can't see people's expressions. It's hard to know, making jokes, having a conversation can be really challenging because you can't really tell whether somebody is like, you know, smiling as they're saying a comment, or do they take it seriously? How do you read people's bodies when they've got a mask? The whole experience has been challenging, and it's also been challenging for the students who aren't getting sort of the normal sort of college experience. The dining hall, most of the time students had to eat their food sort of takeaway. We had tents outside where they could eat, which is fine, you know, for I guess, you know, until the beginning of November or something. And then it gets so unpleasant in central Illinois that you don't really want to be outside for long periods. You know, so there's a whole range of different sort of challenges. You know, in talking to the students, you know, most of them, I think, found it better than trying to do everything over Zoom. When this all started happening in March, and the governor sort of said we needed to sort of close things down, that happened after our spring break, but basically without a whole lot of warning. And so, you know, faculty were really scrambling to sort of get things online and get their classes taught. Students were scrambling to sort of make sure they had the right technology and could get access. And we have a lot of students who are coming from places where they might not have really good technology. We have a lot of students from rural areas and students from lower income urban areas. And if you don't have, you know, a really big internet connection and you've got four people trying to use it and use video and stuff like that all the time, it can really bog down. And some of the students in rural areas basically don't have internet at all, you know, or have it so slow that it's not worth talking about. And so there's a whole myriad of challenges related to those sorts of things as well.
Hopefully we'll have learned some good things and be able to put them into practice when we have this under control and can move forward. Outside of education or inside education, what would you like to see done when this is over?
Well, I'm very much looking forward to sort of being able to just get back together and see people. So, I mean, not through Zoom, but actually get together and sort of see people face to face. You know, I'm looking forward to being able to have classes with my students again, and everybody's in the room. I'm looking forward to being able to have worship services reopen. I'm looking forward to being able to go back to restaurants and eat inside. What I'm hoping, I don't know, I guess in terms of what I think we can learn sort of going forward, you know, I'm hoping that we will sort of think about ways to better safeguard, I guess, come up with better policies, because there's going to be another sort of virus at some point. And so I think, you know, thinking about making sure that we're ready for that eventuality, that we have better plans. You know, I think it's been striking that some of the Asian countries, which have really struggled with more sort of viral outbreaks over the last 20 years than we have, seem to have handled this much better, because they, you know, when COVID started, they pulled out their sort of playbook and started saying, okay, here it starts, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. They had a clear plan, they executed it, and they basically got through COVID with a lot less stress and economic disruption than we have. So I'm hoping that we will learn, you know, figure out how to do that better.
So how have you personally been coping with coronavirus and staying motivated and busy?
Personally, I think that you know, the way you can get through a PhD program in religion is by being willing to sort of put your nose to the grindstone and sit in the library by yourself and read a lot of books. And that's kind of what I've done over the last, I've continued to read a lot of books and sort of sit by myself. To get a doctorate, that's, you've got to have that kind of willingness to sort of sit in a library and be by yourself. For people who are more extroverted and who really want to be involved with people all the time, I think it's been hitting that kind of personality a lot more strongly than it might have affected me. I've been doing a lot so you asked Randy earlier, what's the nice thing about living in a smaller town? One of the nice things is, you know, we have lots of sidewalks. You can go for a walk. You can go for a run. I mentioned I do a lot of bicycling, so I've been doing a lot of bicycling, doing a lot of exercise, and just sort of getting out and walking around. And after the initial lockdown, when you would go out and see people, you know, everybody seemed very cheery and happy just to see another person. And so, you know, there was a lot of, you know, waving and helloing. Didn't know who these people were, but it's another person. Let's say hello. So, I mean, I think that's those kinds of things, just getting out, getting about.
Are you still working with your bees?
Yeah, yes, I am. Yeah, the bees are a good social distancing thing too. Nobody wants to be around you when you've got a bunch of bees. Yeah, I've been keeping bees for about 3 years now. This summer I had a pretty good harvest of honey. One of the things that we haven't been able to do is the local, the Jacksonville sort of Morgan County Beekeeping Club hasn't really had a whole lot of meetings because of COVID. And that's been one of those things that I'm looking forward to being able to get back to. But yes, the bees, I guess I had 3 hives going into the summer and I had 5 hives at the end of the summer, which is pretty good. And I had a pretty good honey harvest. I had about 6 or 7 gallons of honey. So, and real beekeepers measure it in pounds. I'm just a hobbyist, so I have a bucket. I measure it by volume, which isn't really kosher, but you know, whatever. I'm not selling it either, so it doesn't really matter.
That's pretty cool. Why did you get into beekeeping?
You know, that's a good question. I saw there was the local extension office here was offering a class in beekeeping. And I remember when I was a kid, my dad worked for Gulf Oil right outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And he had a bunch of bees. He had 5 or 6 hives. And I remember, you know, this would have been when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. I remember sort of helping, putting air quotes here, helping dad with the bees. When we moved to Washington, D.C., he gave those beehives to his father. Grandpa kept those bees going for the next 25 years. You know, there was this sort of weird sort of connection to sort of family tradition. You know, I certainly don't have any of my grandfather's equipment or my dad's equipment or anybody's equipment. I went out and got all new stuff, but I was sort of interested in it because, you know, I had sort of been aware of bees, and our neighbors when I was growing up had a beehive across the street from us, and I would go over and look at it sometimes. So I've always been sort of interested. And, you know, when I saw this class was being offered, and I was concerned about, you know, the people talking about colony collapse disorder and all the problems that bees are having, you know, I thought it would be an interesting thing to pick up as a hobby. So I took the class and bought some, you know, the hive bodies and got some bees, and it's been interesting. Mostly painless. I've got one hive that always gives me trouble when I inspect it. And this summer, I had one time where I was inspecting the hive, and I think I bent over, my little jacket sort of hiked up a little bit, and the bees found their way inside the jacket. I wish somebody had a Ring doorbell, because they would have seen me running down the street, sort of swatting myself, trying to like squish the bees before they stung me and get away from the bees and shed the jacket.
That's a committed hobby. We are talking with Adam Porter. He is a member of the NPR Illinois Advisory Board and a professor at Illinois College. We really appreciate you joining us here on Community Voices as we try to raise money for the year-end drive. And if you have the chance to give and are listening, please go to nprillinois.org and make a gift. It doesn't take much time at all. Or you can call 206-9847 and do it through the telephone.